information about it and the body of the letter and so on. And in theory, this could become part of the archive and a letter that could be referred to by other people. And I think
that's right. And what happens next is once the letter is submitted, law students in the various schools go through it and pull out these legal terms, the jargon, the claims that are being made and annotate it.
So explain what's going on. I just pulled up a sample letter. Explain what's going on in this letter.
This is a letter Sony sent a cease and desist letter to a programmer who had taught his robot dog to dance. The Aibo dog robot Sony sells can be programmed to do various activities. This programmer had, Sony claims, circumvented Sony's copy protection in order to give his dog more activity, in order to let his dog be a dancer, to make art from it. Sony claims this was circumventing copy protections and sent a cease and desist letter telling him to take these programs off his website, stop sharing them, and go away. So what the students have done on this letter is set up links explaining the terms that Sony uses. Copyrighted software would go to an explanation of, well, what is copyright? Exclusive rights. What kinds of things are copyrightable? And then what kinds of copying is permitted under the law? We'll give perhaps a different answer from the one the lawyers would have you believe when they sent that letter saying, these are copyrighted programs, pull them off your site now.
Well, let's jump to the last of the sort of triumvirate of sites that you're working on. Just briefly, what's the third wheel that's going to come out soon?
Okay, so the third piece is a way more directly to talk to artists who are producing work and want to release them under an alternative to the exclusive rights that copyright gives them. The project is Creative Commons. It's getting started to allow them to choose open licenses like the GPL in the software world. It gives a different set of default terms. So instead of creating a work that by default is closed, exclusive to you, and proprietary, Creative Commons will give you the choice to label this work as open, freely shareable, modifiable, and something that you want to see other artists reuse and incorporate in their own work.
So that in some ways is the answer to the question that came up about how do you maintain standards of openness online in particular, although my understanding is that Creative Commons could apply to any artwork in any medium, but in particular, how do you increasingly monetized world of the internet, how do you maintain the openness that gave online art such a rich beginning?
So this is a project that will be launching, or we expect more to be available in the coming months.
Okay. I'm going to stop there for this part of the discussion. There's plenty else to talk about, but we promised openness, and we're going to try to squeeze in a bit of openness here at the end. So any questions, and I would just say that for the sake of getting as many questions as possible, if you can keep them short, and we'll try to keep our answers short. Yes, in the front row.
Did you say something?
What's the last one? Creative Commons.
Creative
will be at creativecommons.org. At the moment, you can go there and put your name onto a mailing list to get notice when there's more to be seen.
I also say that this actual presentation, as well as related links, will be webcast or uploaded courtesy of Wendy at Harvard's Berkman Center website, which is cyber.law.harvard.edu. And Wendy, I didn't ask you if there's any other piece or if they'll be able to find it
We'll link it off the front of the slide.
Okay, so again, cyber.law.harvard.edu. Other questions? Yes.
Yeah, the DCSS case is actually seen only in the court of appeal. I would like to know if there is any possibility to overturn the decision in the first place in the court of appeal for reviewing the Supreme Court, and what do you think of the decision of Judge Kaplan on the...
The question is whether the DCSS decision could be overturned on appeal.
So that case was, Judge Kaplan's decision was affirmed by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals here, which said that even though DCSS code was speech, it was, its function was to evade these copy controls, and that therefore Congress could outlaw that speech. That case, there's been a petition for rehearing by the full court, but it's hard to say at this point. I think we will need more examples of the types of harm these laws can do before the Supreme Court would want to take it up.
Okay, so a good chance for you to contribute to openlaw.org. Other questions? Yes, Tim?
Is, say, the DCSS case got solved in a way where the code was legal, would that effectively kill the Digital Millennium Copyright Act? And then to the side of that, is there against the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to try to repeal that law altogether?
A lot of opposition to that growing among the started out among the technically minded community that I think is growing. A recently launched project at digitalconsumer.org is trying to build public understanding of the issues and opposition to, which is a set of international treaties that Congress said required the United States to follow with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. There's argument over whether we did more than we were required to, but the WIPO treaties do require all of the parties signatory to enact these anti-circumvention provisions and the protection for copyright and copy controls.
And there are many cases where in specific European countries the control is much more stringent than even in America, in particular technologies and particular forms of art. Yeah.
I don't know, I mean, there's a lot of commercial issues, but aren't all these laws, regardless of what they say, irrelevant because of the nature of the web? You mentioned here the internet, but that's different than the web.
Different than what? Than
the web.
The web.
You know, graphical versus text. And the fact that if you just take the web and the internet, it's too vast to control by legislation, let alone precedent, ever. I think the internet is never going to keep up with the curve.
There's been that argument that there could be this continual arms race where somehow the hackers would always stay one step ahead of the controllers, and I think that panelists, what do you think?
Well, one thing I can add, which we didn't get a chance to discuss earlier, is that one thing that I actually am optimistic about is that the technologies that run the web that allow communication to happen on the internet are called protocols, and they're essentially open source. And so for my money, they're actually pretty good, the opposite of that is a proprietary standard or a monopolistic standard. So I think you may have a point that at least from a technological point of view, until that changes, then the internet is a sort of open source system technologically.
The question is how the regulation can take place. And in Lawrence Lessig's new book, again a colleague of Wendy's, A Future of Ideas, he spells out like five different ways that you could essentially shut down content online. And none of them are very savory, I would say, but all of them are realistic.
One thing
the
I
incentives to companies to put tailor their software to enforce the regulations.
Right. One thing that I'm going to throw out here, even though it's just sort of opening a big can of worms, is I love what Wendy's doing, and the notion of a commons has a legal precedent, that it's a kind of a park that anyone can go and, you know, participate in. You don't own any tree in the park. Everyone owns the trees in the park, or no one, and that's regulated by government. But there are some things about this metaphor of the commons that I'm worried about. One of the aspects is what I would call the enforceability dilemma, and it speaks to your question. If you try to, you know, what you're kind of intimating is, well, you couldn't possibly enforce any laws that you did try to use to restrict communication online, because hackers would always get around it. Well, the problem is, if your enforcement is sufficiently weak, then you still have the case that law-abiding citizens will obey the law. And hence, the only people who avoid those laws would be people who break them, and all the law-abiding citizens will be controlled anyway. The other side of the dilemma is, well, let's say that you react by saying, okay, let's make enforcement very strong, then you threaten to shut down the very freedoms that made the internet such an exciting place to begin with. In fact, by sort of claiming that it's unenforceable, you encourage the sort of, you know, rabid control freaks who want to slap the most stringent measures on top of the internet to avoid what they see as a nightmare of anarchy. That's one issue I'm concerned about in the approach of working within the legal system. Another concern, particular to the commons approach, is what I call the mutability problem. And here it's because digital culture is very changeable. It's easy to take a Photoshop document and turn it into another Photoshop document. It's easy to take code and manipulate it and change it and alter it. And that's how open source works. That's how many productive things happen. But let's suppose that someone used one of the licenses available at creativecommons.org to open license a work that they created. But that work was probably created, or perhaps in this hypothetical example, was created derivative to other works, but it was, in the language of the law, transformative. That's just as a provocative example. Many of you may know Jeff Koons created a sculpture based on a postcard called A String of Puppies. The court decided that this was an infringement of the copyright of the original guy who made a postcard of A String of Puppies, even though that was a photograph, and Koons made this elaborate 3D sculpture. Someone could also digitize that photograph and blot out in Photoshop all the puppies and put them in against some background that had flowers everywhere, you know, up in the Swiss Alps or something. And if that case came to trial, a court could decide that that was fair use because it was transformative. It was no longer exactly the same string of puppies. It just had one of the puppies and acted like a collage. However, if that work were then put into the Creative Commons according to an open license, the presumption, I think, of anyone using it would be, well, this is fair game, I can play with this. And someone who had Photoshop could say, you know, I really don't like the flowers. Erase those, copy and clone the puppy, maybe reduce the size, reverse it, and so on, and create a string of puppies all over again, in which case they'd be back into infringement territory. So there's this sort of porousness to the category of fair use in digital culture that Wendy and I have been talking about as potential vulnerability of that project. And one of the responses that I've been thinking about is to, in essence, declare anything streamable to be sort of open for the taking. And it's too much to go into now, but I think it's an issue that's raised by this question of enforceability. In the back?
Is there any chance that Congress might hold back the copyright extension?
Any reasonable chance, given the balance of lobbyists who are currently influencing Congress, I doubt it. Unless the public can really amass a voice of its own to explain why these extensions and takings from the public domain are harmful, I don't see legislative action in that direction.
We have time for a couple more questions, if anyone has.
Yes. When you think about open and closed system to go back to the basic structure of the internet and back to the domain system. And which is an actually that had a close to the description where actually it's all the domain set. And so to open it up, as I said, it's a bit more elaborate.
Wendy,
what your feeling is regarding the open flow nature when you can't print internet is we should open it up, but now just going back to the basics, which is that many sessions have been set in very closed systems. Your question is what
Well, so the domain names are an interesting problem or question because to be useful, they have to be shared uniformly. It's very helpful if when I talk about apple.com and send you that URL, you end up at the same website that I was visiting when I sent it to you. It wouldn't be very helpful if Guggenheim.org went to a different place for you than it went to for me. So that part needs to be, there needs to be some common backbone to the system. That was happening just fine before ICANN came in and took over management of that system.
Yeah. It's interesting to note, though, that DNS as a technology is not limiting and proprietary by nature, right? Like you have examples. Paul Guerin doing namespace by opening the system up. What you have is the example of a kind of bureaucratic organization that comes in and tries to govern what is actually an open technology. So that's like the difference between not allowing an open protocol to kind of fully realize itself, but actually overlaying limitations onto it.
That's right, because the DNS does allow for parallel namespaces so someone else can set up
there are numerous examples, including Paul Guerin's project. There are other projects out there that do the same thing, and there's also totally different namespaces for different systems. That is, email is its own namespace. Instant messaging is its own namespace. You know, just because I have, you know, whatever, 3.org, doesn't mean that I can say 3.org is my instant messaging ID. It's not. It's a separate series of IDs. Other questions?
Okay, I think...
I just want to mention that we are following this with a reception at the Goethe Institute. It's only 5 blocks away down Fifth Avenue, so it's a quick chance to buttonhole any of us and talk more. That's at Fifth Avenue between 82nd and 83rd Street. Those of you who don't have your little GPS palm device on you, we are now at 89th Street and Fifth Avenue. Also, if you're interested in the CD-ROMs you saw today, you can order them at a table on your way out through the entrance that you came in. And thank you very much for your patience. And look forward to the webcast on the Berkman Center site. Thank you.